Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to Innergex Renewable Energy's 2018 third quarter results conference call. Bienvenue à la conférence téléphonique des résultats du troisième trimestre 2018 d'Innergex Énergie Renouvelable. At this time, all participants on the phone and internet are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question and answer session for analysts and institutional investors, and instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded. I will now turn the conference over to Karine Vachon, Communications Director. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'd like to specify that this conference will be held in English. Members of the media are invited to ask their questions by phone after this call. This call contains forward-looking statements within the meaning of applicable securities laws. Although the corporation believes that the expectations and assumptions on which forward-looking statements are based are reasonable under the current circumstances, listeners are cautioned not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements, as no assurance can be given that it will prove to be correct. Forward-looking information contained herein is made as of the date of this call, and the corporation does not undertake any obligation to update or revise any forward-looking information, whether as a result of events or circumstances occurring after the date hereof, unless so required by law. During this call, we will refer to financial measures that are not recognized according to International Financial Reporting Standards. Please refer to the non-IFRS measures section of the quarterly report for more information. Our speakers today will be Mr. Michel Letellier, President and CEO, and Mr. Jean Perron, Chief Financial Officer, who is here with you for his last conference call as he is stepping down from his position today. We welcome also on the call Mr. Jean-François Anneau, who is assuming his new Chief Financial Officer role since this morning. Please note that Mr. Letellier and Mr. Perron will be answering the questions today. And I'll turn over the conference to Mr. Perron.
Thank you, Karine. Good morning, everybody. For the three-month period ended September 30, 2018, production was 91% of the long-term average due to below-average water flows across Canada and below-average wind regimes in France. Overall, production increased 25% compared to Q3 2017, due mainly to the contribution of the geothermal facilities acquired in 2018, to higher production at the Mesgig, Oxjussen, and Upper Lillooet River facilities, to better performance at the Quebec wind facilities, and to the French wind facilities commissioned in 2017, partly offset by lower production at the Hydro facilities. For the nine-month period ended September 30, production was 96% of the long-term average due to below-average water flows across Canada and below-average wind regimes and outage caused by maintenance activities in France. This was partly offset by above-average wind regimes in Quebec. The production increased 37% compared with the same period last year due mainly to the commission of geothermal facilities acquired and the wind farms acquisition in France in 2017, to higher production at Mesgig, Oxjussen, and Upper Lillooet River facilities, and to better performance at the Quebec wind facilities. Revenues for the quarter were $32.5 million higher than in 2017. This 30% increase is due to the conversion of the geothermal facilities, higher production at Mesgig, Oxjussen, and Upper Lillooet, and to the conversion of facilities that were commissioned in 2017 in France, namely Rougemont d'Oeuf, Plafleury, and Les Renardières. Revenues for the nine-month period were $115.9 million higher than in 2017. This 40% increase is also due to the conversion of the wind facilities acquired in France in 2017. Adjusted EBITDA for the quarter was $9.8 million higher compared to Q3 2017 due to the increase in revenues explained before, partly offset by higher operating expense, mainly from HS or CA, and general administrative expense due to the higher number of facilities and to higher prospective expenses. Adjusted EBITDA for the nine-month period was $51.4 million higher compared to the same period last year for the same reason as explained for the quarter. Adjusted EBITDA proportionate for the quarter was $34.5 million higher, or 42%, and for the nine-month period, $88.5 million, which is 39% higher than corresponding period of last year. The share of earnings of the joint ventures and associates are higher by $14.9 million for quarter and $14.2 million for the nine-month period following the acquisition of Altera, who owns eight investments in joint ventures and associates that are not consolidated. And this quarter, there was also an investment in Energia Llama in Chile for 50% ownership. Our free cash flow trailing for the 12-month period ended September 30 reached $97.5 million compared to $88.9 million for the comparative period ending Q3 2017. Our payout ratio stood at 88% compared to 80% in 2017. This change results mainly from higher scheduled debt repayment, higher dividend payment as a result of the issuance of 24.3 million shares related to the Altera acquisition, the increase in quarterly dividend, partly offset by the cash flow from the acquisition of Altera, and the recent commissioning of Mesgik Ugjusun, operated with in Boulder Creek facilities, which generated higher free cash flow this year. This concludes my review of the results. I'll be happy to answer any questions later on during the call. I now turn it to Michel.
Well, first and foremost, Jean, I would like to thank you for all these years that you have help us create value in Energex, but I don't know if people know, but you were involved in the early days, even before me, when you were at KPMG advising Energex for tax purposes back in 1995. So actually, you're older than me in Energex. Jean, I cannot thank you enough for all the years and effort that you have put in Energex. I'm glad that we have found a way to keep you around, even though I understand that you have a lot of traveling planning ahead. But in between, I will always welcome your guidance to keep the taxmen waiting in the future. So thank you very much again, Jean, and we'll certainly have more occasion to thank you officially, but I thought it was appropriate since you have worked with all these panelists over the years. So again, thank you.
And now,
Jean-François, can you say a few words to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you, Michel, and good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure for me to join you on this call today. I've joined Energex as I firmly believe in its potential of achieving strong financial results and delivering value to shareholders. I intend to perfect my knowledge of the corporation and the industry and work with the team in place to improve processes and support our growth strategy. I look forward to meet all of you in the following months and to be your main contact for all Energex matters. Thank you. Michel.
So thank you again. So back to the quarter highlights. As you heard Jean talk about the long-term average being a little bit of a challenge this quarter, we cannot do much about that. The weather, we still firmly believe that diversification of both geography and technology is the long-term solution to have constant production and firm long-term strong long-term production. In the meantime, what we can do, and that's what our operating are focusing all the time, is make sure that the machine are available, and we are glad to report that we had the great availability during the quarter. So the guys are focusing, making sure that when we have water or wind, those machines can produce. Also glad that, as you heard Jean saying, that Upper Lillooet and Mesgig Ugjusun project had a little bit of a challenge in the early months of operation last year. Our great team of operation and engineer have found ways to mitigate these, and I think that those initial hiccups are behind us now, so quite positive on those for the future. Now, if we go back to a little bit of the construction, I'm glad to report that we have now a few projects under construction, so that this is good. Last year, we were without much of a project under construction, so we like to build stuff. So now we have started to built the project Phoebe that we have acquired early Q3. This is a 315 DC solar project in Texas. All the access and grading, and now the contractor for solar is starting to put all the foundation in place. So things are settling and going in a good pace. So we are still hoping to have a COD by Q3 next year. So it's quite fast. And as you know, we can work in winter in Texas. A little bit different than here in Montreal, where we have a very nice minus 10 degrees with windy. So in Texas, it's the weather is a little bit more favorable for working in winter. We also have started construction on Fort City. This is a big project for us. It's a great project. It's a 350 megawatt project in Texas. We have initiated some work on the field. We have selected Blattner, the contractor, for the balance of plant. Blattner has done the flat top construction, so pretty confident that these guys can deliver. And we also have selected and initiated limited notice to proceed with GE, will be the supplier of the turbine. We are in final negotiation and putting the paper together with the tax equity and the bridge financing. We're hoping to close those in the next few weeks. So Fort City is getting on track for delivery in COD in Q4 of 2019. Now also, we've been quite active in acquisition. We also have acquired a project called Eelcrest. It's in the Midwest. We're quite happy with our ability to have a PGM project, and this project is shovel ready, has all the interconnection study and paper to have the project interconnected. Negotiating, we want to have a good offtake on that project, so we have a few opportunity to negotiate offtaker. And we'll take advantage of also our great relationship with tax equity provider and banks in order to put together a great proposal for creating value with this project. If things turns out to be successful in our negotiation with the offtake for power, we think we can start the construction as early as 2020. And this project can be in service by late 2020 or 2021. So quite happy to work on that project, and think we can create quite a bit of value and diversification also in a fairly liquid market being PGM. Also quite active in Chile, as we as you know, we have concluded our partnership with Energy Eyaima. You know that we have worked quite diligently to find a good partner in Chile or South America, so now it's done. Quite happy to start working with these guys and create some synergy. We, as you know, have acquired also earlier on in the year the complex of two hydro facility called Duqueco for 140 megawatt. Now we have the keys of these two projects, and our operational team has started to improve and create synergy. I must say that we think that we can create a little bit more value in this project. Definitely, we can improve on water management. We will be investing a little bit in the power canal and also on the management of the upper reserve to manage better the peaking capacity of that plant. So we'll be looking into improving the total production and also the flexibility to produce that energy. I think this is a great advantage in Chile, where there will be some solar project being built in the future. So having the ability to dispose of 4 or 5 hours of peaking capacity during the day or night, is giving a great value to these assets. So we'll be focusing in the next few months, making sure that we're creating value on these and reduce the cost and create some synergy in with the team on the ground. Also for the future in Chile, we want to have an approach to create a portfolio with hydro, some capacity, eventually also some battery, solar project, and wind. We have acquired a small portfolio of wind data, and some projects are quite advanced also in this area. It's not a big portfolio, but it's a start. We want to have also wind in Chile and solar so that we can have a great proposal for off-taker in Chile, having the ability to be diversified both geographically and technology will give us some opportunity to sign long-term contract. So working towards establishing a good working relationship with our partner over there. Also quite happy, and this is for us a great victory for our development team to have one in Hawaii. I just want to make sure that people understood that when we say we have been selected, it means that we have won in terms of the RFP pricing. We are now in a stage to negotiate with the utility the final wording on the PPA. Of course, it's a new PPA for them because it's a different style where we are proposing to build solar panel attached with 4 hours of full capacity of batteries. So this is a little bit new in terms of papering down the PPA, so working with them in order to create the first PPA of this this approach in Hawaii. We are looking for having a capacity payment, a monthly capacity payment with them, so they will be managing the demand of the system, so we'll be providing service and making sure that those will be available, but we will be receiving a monthly payment. So we'll talk about it a little bit later when we will have finalized the PPA, because it's always subject to finalizing and agree with all these clauses, but quite confident that this should be done by the year end. So quite happy to have this ability now to work and become a leader in this new and exciting segment of our industry, coupling solar and battery to supply capacity in the future. Quite happy on this win. Now, if we go back also on acquisition, we have now, we were working hard on this over the years, and it's always has been on our radar screen, the acquisition of the 62% of Cartier from TransCanada. So very happy to have now these project being under one roof. We concluded this transaction in mid-October. I think that also a little bit of numbers have been going into our way. We had negotiated the price of $630 million back in June, but we were owners of the cash flow during that period of initial transaction and closing, and the project have generated something around $10 million over the period, John.
Well, $10 million is the 62% shares.
So yeah. I agree with you. So what we have done since we didn't close, we have applied that $10 million against the purchase price. So now the purchase price stand to be $620 million. So that's help, obviously, to improve the total return of the project. Quite happy also on the fact that we are now quite advanced, and the banking syndicate that are going to provide the term loan to finance these projects or that acquisition are in final process of credit approval. I'm glad to report that the initial $400 million that was thought to be the target will be materially over that, and also the price or the spread on the credit for that particular transaction is also better than what we had expected. So all in all, very happy to report on the advancements of this project finance that will be repaying the $400 million bridge that we had secured when we announced the acquisition. In terms of integration, as you know, we know the team. We are taking 49 people, but 49 people seems high to operate these five wind farm, but one has to remember that we are self-operating in those. So self-operating is a good segment for us to have. It means that we know how much it costs to operate these facilities. We have been focused on reducing costs and being efficient and being also available when the wind is blowing. So this is providing us a tool to make sure that whenever we're negotiating with turbine supplier for long-term contract to operate these facility, future facility in our portfolio, we have these people now in experience to help us making sure that we get good value for these long-term contracts. So it's very important for us to have this balance and know how to operate the facility, and making sure we can challenge turbine manufacturer in the future. But that being said, we also have a bridge to acquire the Cartier. We remember that we have a $400 million bridge for the acquisition that will be taken care of with the banking syndicate, but we also had the $228 million bridge loan to acquisition that we said we would cover from some asset sales. Some of you have heard about a process in Iceland. Some minority shareholder in Iceland have gone into a process to sell their shares, so that has brought a lot of rumor about our ability or willingness to sell our majority stake in HSORCA. I must confirm that this asset is definitely part of our reflection on which asset we should be selling. Throughout this this process from a third party, we had a lot of incoming interest for this asset. It's a great asset, and I think we think that the commercial value of this asset is greater than what we carry on the books. The operation over the year has improved a lot, and we have some very good potential upside to grow the business in Iceland. So quite confident that this book value that we carry on the Iceland asset is somewhat below the market, the fair market value of our asset. So I won't go further in this. I think you understand that we are looking to maximize the shareholder value, but obviously this is something that we could consider. So thank you for your attention. As you can see, have been very busy with amazing project this quarter. I must say that I'm so proud of my team. I'm always amazed on how much we can accomplish when we work together. So we're looking for a greener and a bright future, and I will be taking questions with Jean. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your touchtone phone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Your questions will be pulled in the order they are received. Please ensure you lift the handset if you're using a speakerphone before pressing any keys. One moment, please, for the first question. Your first question comes from the line of Rupert Merer with National Bank. Your line is open.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Congratulations on the retirement, Jean, and welcome, Jean-François.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So if I can start with potential for asset sale and capital recycling. So it sounds like you could look to sell HS Orca or any other assets. Is it possible that we'll see more than one activity here, meaning if I look at your development pipeline, your outstanding equity needs could go beyond just the sale of that one asset? Are you still looking at capital recycling initiatives or asset sell downs for some of your other assets?
Well, theoretically, HS Orca could fetch a lot more than a book value, like I said. So, also the fact that we have now include Cartier is bringing some direct cash flow into the credit facility that we held at the corporate level. As you remember, there's quite a bit of assets over there that doesn't have any project finance. So we have unencumbered assets that support this loan on corporate level. But given the fact that new projects are coming in, that would free up also some ability to raise more cash on the corporate level. So all in all, I'm not too keen to sell too many assets. As you know, we like to own, operate, and make sure that we create value for our shareholder. But in the future, perhaps we could be looking in partnering in places where we are growing fast. Texas could be an area where in the future we could, once project are in operation, welcome a partner to take some of the equity, but that would be a minority order. We said that we could also look into Cartier having a minority holder in Cartier, but depending on how we will be finalizing the financing, we think we're creating a lot of value by utilizing the full leverage or capacity of these projects. So you'd be surprised in the future, I think, that how much we can generate from our own leverage capacity and perhaps a sale of one particular asset.
Okay, great. Thank you. Secondly, looking at your Chilean assets, so we had the a first look at the performance of these assets. You've talked about some potential for synergy and cost reduction there. So far, are the assets running close to your expectations? And can you give us a little more color into the SG&A run rate there? I think it was $7.8 million in the quarter. How much of that is sort of standard administrative costs versus development costs, and where should we expect that to shake out in the future?
Yeah, we're working on with them on the future development for 2019 and going out. So we'll if you bear with us, so we'll give you a little bit more guidance in the first quarter on how this will turn out. But of course, the Duqueco asset, I must say, I was quite surprised on how many employees they were there. All in all, for two plan, they were close to 40 employees slash contractor, and we intend to make that a lot more leaner. There's the culture in Chile to operate differently on that particular asset that I think we can turn around. Also, there were an incident way back, well, probably 5 years ago, that had some incident on the power canal that were fixed to be, I would say, on the short-term thinking. I think that we can fix this this canal, power canal, to bring back some production. I would say 5-7% more production out of those plants quite easily, and also the upstream reserve has been underutilized, and we think we can improve quite a bit on that. So quite positive that we will be improving on Duqueco. And for your question on SG&A there, I think that all in all, with the reduction of Duqueco, I don't think we will see a big increase in terms of SG&A, but we'll be refocusing on area where we think we can have success in terms of putting forward projects that are quite advanced. There's a segment that we're not talking too much in Chile that these guys have been working hard, is selling hot water to mines, and there's Pampa and Vera that is doing so. It's in the middle of a renegotiation contract that goes very well and will extend the life of that particular project. But there's two other projects that are quite advanced in roughly the same size that can see the light of the day in 2019, and those projects can be built quite fast. So there will be some good development opportunity in Chile, and we will be giving you a little bit more guidance. Bear with us, you know, we just started the partnership over there, and just taking a little bit of time to establishing ourselves and making sure that priorities are put together. And I'm going to Chile actually next week with Jean-François to overview the 2019 budget.
All right, great. I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Sean Stewart with TD Securities. Your line is open.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Sean.
A few questions. The Frontera advanced development project, it looks like you're ready to go there. Can you give us an update on where you are with respect to an offtake agreement? How much of the output do you need contracted before you start construction there?
Yeah. Obviously, we are going to be cautious because it's a fairly big big project, 110 megawatt of hydro over there. So the project in terms of permitting and social acceptability is like we were saying, shovel ready. But we are still working hard to find an off-taker. There's a little bit of a challenge in terms of timing because it could take 3 years to build, so it's a little bit more challenging to find an off-taker when the COD is in the future. But with the acquisition of Duqueco, we could somehow find ways to attract a good off-taker. But I'd be cautious on how fast we can start the construction on Frontera, given the size of the project and the lack of off-taker. But we are positive about the fact that Chile is improving in terms of economy. The mine, there's a lot of activities now in the mining sector. Manager in those organizations are looking more and more to have green supply of electricity. So that's helping us quite a bit. If you remember, Chile has more than a third of its production coming from coal, and this is those are big international mining companies that have now more and more pressure from their board and shareholders to utilize greener energy in the future. So we're still positive, but I'm cautious on giving you timing on Frontera construction start.
Okay. Thanks for that. Second question on Saskatchewan, the wind RFP there, you guys weren't successful. Do you have any takeaways you can provide with respect to, I guess, future procurements in that province and more generally across Canada on wind, how you're thinking about prospective growth there?
Okay. Well, we were disappointed in Saskatchewan. We had three projects. Actually, we were partner with Kroger on Montmartre, and our project was called Yotun. The three proposal that we had submitted at both First Nation majority component that we were hoping could have been seen as a great benefit, that was the signal that the government and SaskPower had provided. Unfortunately, we couldn't get a clear picture on how much point a good social project integrated with First Nation and local community would have fetched in terms of advantage versus a project, a straight project. So a little bit of lesson learned on Saskatchewan. We now have a few other projects that were not ready last year to be submitted that are perhaps simpler in their structure and perhaps more windy, and we intend to utilize those into a different strategy. So we'll have both social acceptable, very high penetration of local and First Nation, and perhaps a project that SaskPower seems to prefer, a straight crown on crown land and very windy project that could be quite competitive. So we'll have those two strategy for the SaskPower future RFPs. Other than that, I guess that Canada has some opportunity in Alberta, but we never been very focused on Alberta. Hoping that perhaps in BC with the LNG being developed, there might be some opportunity to work in the north of BC with First Nations. So always prepared to make good proposal with First Nation in the north of BC.
Okay, that's all I have for now. Thanks very much, and congratulations, Jean, and we look forward to working with you, Jean-François.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Nelson Ng with RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Great, thanks. Good morning, everyone. Just a good quick follow-up from Sean's question on Saskatchewan and SaskPower. In terms of the, I think the power price being something well below $42 per megawatt hour. Are you guys generally competitive within that range?
We were below that, even with First Nations. So I'm not so discouraged. I'm a little bit frustrated because we didn't have any clear answer on what was the price adder. Remember that in Ontario, when you had First Nation participation, there were a clear adder about a dollar 1.5 cents adder for First Nation. So knowing or having advertised that this was very important for them and not knowing what type of adder they had put together on how weight these First Nation or social acceptability criteria, it's difficult to tell you how much how much more competitive we would have been if we would not have had some First Nation participation. But even with the proposal, we think we were, well, first of all, we were below that that 42. So, and we don't know the real price of the winner. So it's a little bit difficult to go a little bit further, but I'm not discouraged because, like I said, there's other places where we have land that are windier, and perhaps we could propose something a little bit more simpler in terms of cost structure that could be competitive in the future. So what is difficult is when you don't have clarity, and this is probably where my frustration in Saskatchewan is coming from.
Okay, got it. And then in terms of, I guess, the competitive tension or bidding tension, how, like, do you see, like, has it changed at all with long-term interest rates rising? And is that, like, are bidders looking to kind of improve their development returns in light of higher interest rates? And then can you also talk about the, I guess, competitive tension on the turbine manufacturing side?
That's a good question, Nelson. We strive as an investor to make sure that you stay competitive with the type of cap rate that you're utilizing to bid the development project or even acquisition. There's always a little bit of a lag in private transaction versus the public companies. As a public company, get arbitrage quite fast with the movement of interest rate. It takes a little bit more time, I guess, to filter down through the private transactions. So we're seeing, especially in North America, I think, a little bit more discipline from potential buyers. It's not yet reflected in Europe, so we might be slowing down in terms of acquiring existing asset in Europe. As you know, the euro rate has still been low compared to what we've seen in North America on Treasury bill and Canadian bond. So we're playing safe in Europe in terms of acquisition because I'd say the cap rate are still probably historical low in Europe, and we're seeing a little bit more improvement in terms of cap rate in North America. South America is probably seeing also some pressure in terms of rate adjustment as well.
Okay. And then just moving on to France, the wind resource has been like pretty weak this past quarter, and I think it's been weak like all year and even last year. Are you guys looking to? Do you think this is just normal variations in wind, or are you guys looking to kind of change the way or change your definition of long term average? And then also finally, can you just talk about wind in October? Was that a little weak as well?
Well, it's a good question. Always always concerned about long-term trend. When you look at the trend of the last years in France, we have seen some movement up and down, obviously, but we're getting into a third year, or I must say, lower regime in France. And that's always a concern, obviously, for us. Whenever we are looking into acquiring or establishing long-term forecasts, we are integrating the last years and perhaps putting a little bit more weight into these weak past years. So we're concerned. We're digging in with our technical team. Of course, we also are on the lookout with these long-term forecasts now that seems to be getting better and better in terms of predicting what could be happening in climate change. So we still feel that climate change will take quite a bit of time to establish itself, and it's not necessarily so easy to predict the effect on wind patterns or hydrologies. But I must say that our team is very tuned to these long-term trends. I'm not so concerned about France, but as you know, France is known to have places where low wind regime are in place, even in the long term, and a small difference in the wind speed can affect to some degree has a greater effect on production. So that's probably what we're seeing. Just a small decrease is having a little bit more effect on total production. But I would say that I'm still very confident on the long-term trend and on the long-term average that our technical team has done. You've seen what we have been tracking over the years. We're proud of our ability to have been able to meet the long-term forecast. So the same team, same conservative apply, so not worry too much. And of course, if you, to answer your question, October was okay. November seems to be pretty good in France. So looking forward to having a better winter, that would be very welcome.
Okay.
And I think I kind of forgot what the rest of your question, Nelson.
No, you answered. Yeah, you answered the full question.
Perfect.
Can I just quickly touch on Ford City? So you've essentially started construction to a limited degree. Are all of the costs essentially locked down and the final hurdle is really to close tax equity and financing? And then on those costs, I think earlier this year you mentioned that the total cost would be below 400 million U.S. Is that still the case?
Yeah, it's still the case. We have finalized everything, quite happy with the final negotiation. The reason why we have yet to provide the full notice and is obviously we would like to have the tax equity and the bridge financing, construction financing in place. We still are waiting for the final FAA. It's the Federal American Aviation Administration. We had all the initial wind location agreed. Now we have improved a little bit on the layout in order to maximize the production, and we're yet to have the final approval on these small changes. Nothing that seems with our contractor to attract any big problems. And if we would have to move some turbines, we have now a lot more room and land under option to move a few turbines here and there if there's any problem. We're told that it takes what it takes with the military base in Texas. It seems that they have their way of dealing with wind developers. So nothing to be a big concern, but obviously we're cautious until we get the full clearing on the FAA.
Okay. Thanks, Michelle. I'll get back in the queue.
Your next question comes from the line of Yannick Prince with the Socially Responsible Investment Club of Quebec. Your line is open.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. First off, I'd like to congratulate Jean on his career at Innergex and take a small moment to thank Michelle and Karine for allowing our charitable fund to be part of this call, which is, to my knowledge, international first. So thank you for that. So I have two very short questions. First, I was wondering if Jean could maybe shed some light on the company's current exposure to green bonds and maybe tell us a little bit more, well, let us know whether the company have recourse to green bonds at the current moment and if he could shed some light also on some of the financial advantages and disadvantages of such a financial tool for a company like Innergex compared to traditional obligations. And secondly, my question goes to Michelle. It's more with regards to present CSR risk, basically in terms of local population and environmental risk. If you could also shed some light on some of the biggest challenges that Innergex is facing at the present time, that would be appreciated.
Okay. Yannick, I'll answer also the bond side. I've been inquiring a little bit more. It's an interesting concept, this green bond. I think that in the future, as they get known better, we'll potentially see a benefit for us to take this tools as a way to finance a future project. So far, we haven't seen in North America a financial benefit in terms of pricing. From what I gather, in Europe, you're starting to see a little bit of price advantage of using bonds. So this definitely something that we'll be looking in the future to develop. Of course, for us, it's pretty easy to establish that these bonds would be green because they would be financing a social acceptable renewable energy project. So definitely, if they're becoming a price, if we can find a price advantage, even if it takes a little bit more administrative or due diligence or paperwork to establish their green attributes, we would definitely take a closer look at it. And thank you for your question about social or environmental challenges that we are facing. As you know, Innergex has been on the forefront of the old frontier of having project to be socially acceptable and also being partnered with local community. Of course, we have a lot of experience in Canada. We have had great success. Our team have obviously worked hard, especially in British Columbia. I think that British Columbia is known to be quite of a challenge to get permitting over there, and we have raised to the occasion in many times in British Columbia. And I think that this is helping us in ways that make some difference in certain area, especially in Hawaii. This is a good example. Of course, Hawaii is new for us, but we have had some public open house and reach out for community. And the feedback we had from these community is that it's a breath of fresh air for them to see a company that is so proactive with local community and being so open in discussing impact with their project. So I think that from the experience we had in Canada and British Columbia, these type of community in Hawaii, which are very focused on environmental impact and social acceptability, is giving us, at the end of the day, a good hedge for us to implement a project. And it's obviously always a challenge to learn the new culture in a new area, but I think our team is very well equipped to do this. France is also a place where obviously project can take a lot of time for permitting. We're working hard now, and our culture on developing project in accordance with social guidelines is helping us developing and having a very good contact with France. I would say that in terms of environmental impact, the biggest challenge we're having in wind is the bat population. So the bat is in many places a species of concern, and they have been known to have some difficulties with wind turbines. So this is the industry, it's not just Innergex. The industry is facing that challenge, and I think that we are working hard with a lot of local government agency to find long-term solution to have a good coexistence between wind and bat population. So this is an industry challenge, and of course, Innergex is really interested and working very hard to with local agency to find long-term solution to minimize the bat impact on wind. So those are probably the biggest challenge we're facing, Yannick.
Well, thank you, and I'll get back on the queue.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Mark Jarvi with CIBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Good morning. Good morning, Mark.
Yeah, good morning. I just want to touch on the Cartier, and you know, when it was announced, when you guys talked about it, you sounded pretty confident you would sell down a minority stake. Now it seems like you're debating that. Is that just a function of getting more project finance on that and less need to sell down an interest to cover the bridge facility? Or maybe you can just explain what's changed in the last couple of months.
It's a good question. Well, first, you're right. If we are more flexible to create a structure where the leverage can be maximized, obviously the leverage is always the cheapest cost of capital, and hence our team is focusing on that. And we were, like I said, happily surprised to see how much leverage we could put on Cartier asset restructure as a whole. So our 38 and the 62 can be put together and free some, I would say, some leverage that were locked in the past. So this is probably the reason why we're waiting and being less inclined to transact on Cartier's asset. On the other end, like you heard me talking about Iceland, so we were happily surprised also to see incoming non-solicited interest during the summertime, and that made us perhaps reconsider what we would be doing in terms of asset sale. And like I said, I think that we have a marketable value on those assets that is beyond what we're carrying in the books.
Okay, that's good, Carl. And then I just wanted to touch base on some of the assets you acquired from Altera. Just wondering what you guys are thinking in terms of the cash distribution levels you've gotten from the tax equity projects thus far, and even Jimmy Creek, where it doesn't seem like you got any distributions this year. Maybe you can just tell us about how distributions coming back to Innergex have turned out so far.
Yeah. Jean, do you have...
Well, as far as tax equity is kind of senior to any distribution that are made to the sponsor. So in some situations, like in the, you know, the tax equity, they are reaching or they're entitled to a certain level of return. And if the result or there's less production at one point in time, there's some triggering event, and in this triggering event, they might be receiving a temporarily higher portion of the cash flows from the projects. So this is what's happening right now, but eventually it will normalize and it will reverse, and then we can be in this situation where we will be able to receive our share of the distribution. So it's only, I think, something that will happen over time in this type of project of renewable project where you cannot have a predictable production that will not vary quarter to quarter. So it might happen that from time to time it will be the case, which is the case right now, but eventually it will reverse out. So it's not something abnormal or something that we should be alarmed of. It will only be something temporary.
Okay. And then, on Jimmy Creek, when do you guys think you'll get distributions from that facility?
It is very hard to tell because it's all dependent on what will be the production next quarter or the quarter after. So it's always that you might have good quarter and then it will reverse very quickly. If your quarter are just okay, it might take a longer period. So it's not like I can give a definite answer that it will be back in normal in 1, 2, 3, 4 quarter. It will be depending on the production at that time. So
yeah, remember that the BC production was weak in Jimmy Creek, so that's one of the issue, and also in Texas the wind was also below the long term average, so that accessorbate the tax equity effect being preferred payment to the tax equity first. So I think that what Jean is saying, as soon as the wind or water would be coming back to long-term averages or higher, obviously we will see a lot more distribution from those assets.
Okay. I'll leave it there, and just all the best to Jean in his new role and future endeavors.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Ben Pham with BMO. Your line is open.
Okay, thanks. Good morning.
Hello, Ben.
Before I forget, also best wishes to you, John, and welcome, Jean-Francois.
Thank you, Ben.
So, question going back to HS Orca, can you help me and also listeners to quantify the book value on your balance sheet, or maybe just point us to how to think about it? Because I think there's some holdco debt and then Blue Lagoon. I'm not sure that's booked in the assets of HS Orca. I may just kind of walk through, whether it's how to calculate or if you know what the book value is. I'm sure you know what it is. It's just, can you share what it is?
Well, the book value is disclosed in the note to the financial statement, where we're showing what was the investment in the entities that have managed interest. So I will have to look about which note it is exactly, but you're going to see it. And basically, it shows that the purchase price that we have allocated to HS Orca, which includes a 30% participation into Blue Lagoon, is about $350 million, roughly.
Okay, so the net is 350 then? When?
Yes. So the total of these two investments, so the investment in HS Orca, including the participation into Blue Lagoon.
Okay. All right. That's kind of what I was generally getting. Okay. Thanks for that. And then the Hawaii situation, was that part of the Altera portfolio at all?
No, that was okay. A greenfield initiated by our team in Vancouver directly. So one of the reasons why we've been, I would say, successful is that we had great land location close to a good interconnection. So guys have been able to secure a big land owner called Parker Ranch on Big Island, and that was one of the reason why I think we were very competitive in that particular RFP. And also we were talking with Tesla, that is the potential provider of the battery pack and a long-term service agreement for us. They were very competitive, and I think that both our team and this proposal came to a very successful proposal to Hawaii Utilities.
Okay. And then maybe can I lastly switch over to Chile, and you highlighted previously a very attractive opportunity for your long-term given pricing and development. How do you guys think about the potential for a global recession occurring and impact on power prices and demand for copper overall? Like, is that just slow down in near term accretion expectations in that asset?
That's a good question, Ben. If I would be an expert in global economy, I don't think I would be sitting here, and I would only need a computer and trade on currency and. But it's difficult to assess, but it's always a possibility. You know, it's with trade wars and Mr. Trump creating perhaps some commercial challenges for China and so forth. But I think in general, the demand for copper seems to be strong based on the fact that a lot of electricity cars and component will utilize the copper. So my understanding is that copper demand for the future will be strong. And Peru and Chile are actually one of the lowest producer of copper. So I think that they would survive any weakness. Those areas are very competitive, cost competitive to compare to other places. And remember Chile, why we like Chile in terms of pricing, even in the last few years where the Chile economy was not very hot in terms were fairly, I wouldn't say weak, but neutral. the price of electricity spot was in the range of anywhere between $55 and $75 per megawatt hour, and this is driven in big part because Chile doesn't have natural gas. It has to import it on the LNG, and of course when you import LNG and then you have to distribute it again, that has quite a bit on the price of electricity. So even with very cheap gas in the last few years, the spot market in Chile has stayed quite robust. So this is why we think that when we forecast our project, we have this type of approach where if we're conservative and we pick something around 40-ish dollar per megawatt hour and make our acquisition profitable, then we're quite optimistic going forward that this project can sustain even weak economy in Chile.
Okay, I wanted to clarify that point. So it sounds like you've built in a very good downside protection to get a decent return, but you haven't necessarily factored in a global recession near term. And if that were to occur, I'm not saying it will, that maybe some development opportunities could slip into the future.
Yes, of course, we will be prudent in terms of deploying capital when if there's a high risk of global recession. So far, from my humble understanding, we're not necessarily in the brink of global recession, but it's always a possibility, and you know that we've been cautious in the past, and that will not change.
All right, perfect. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Vachon, there are no further questions at this time. Please continue.
Well, thank you, everyone, for participating in this call. We look forward to speaking with you again at our next call in February.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.